that do need to be done, and so we hope we can step up to the plate and take care of some of these problems. We've had two meetings of the a group of legislative leaders and administration leaders where we've talked in generalities about the concept of a plan to work together to try and ferret out how we can make these kind of reductions that need to be made. We've had people talk about reductions in the ranges from $300 million to $50 million, and kind of just in talking through the process with the people in the meetings we've had in the governor's office and in private meetings that I've had with different legislators, it seems like everybody nods their head and say, yeah, that's a number that we can live with. Hasn't been any specific buy-in that that's the right number, but at least that's the number that we're working with right now, because that seems to be the one where you get the least people excited about the number. After we had arrived at that number, in the administration at least, we decided to look specifically right now at the operation of government and kind of set aside the formula programs. So we know that the formula programs, at least we believe the formula programs, are going to have to take some share of the reduction. But what happens, as you know better than I, because you've been here longer than I, most of you, if you ask a department to make a reduction with no ground rules, the first reduction is probably going to come out of the formula programs because that's the easiest for the departments to do. And so what we did was decided that about 45% of our expenditures this last year, and that could be argued with too, but this is our analysis, about 45% of our expenditures were in formula programs and 55% in the operation of government. So we use that percentage of the $200 million. And 55% of $200 million comes out to $110 million, and that's the number that we started with to ask our departments then to see if we could reduce expenditures to that amount. OMB then went through a process similar to the process we went through when we set the what we call the targets for the policy budget, and allocated that $110 million among the departments. So it wasn't a straight across the board. In our allocation, there were some departments whose reduction, and the reductions that we were talking about, by the way, is from the governor's fiscal year 93 budget that obviously hasn't been passed yet, but the budget that we presented, the reductions that we ended up with in our analysis, ranged from 1% in the Department of Corrections up to the 15-20% range in some other departments. After we had arrived at these numbers, then Cheryl from my office sat down with Representative Navarre and Allison and kind of went through the numbers to see what the Finance Committee's thoughts were about what we were looking at. And we did, on most of the departments, come to some sort of a mutual understanding of, yeah, that's about the number we ought to be looking for. There's two or three departments that were $2-4 million apart, but for the most part, they're not big differences, and we think they're numbers that we can work with. After we had done that, we met with all of our commissioners on an individual basis. Cheryl and Max Hodel and I met with each of the commissioners about a half-hour meeting each, and just went through with each of them the scenario, how we got where we were, the difficulty we had, and presented them with what we thought they ought to be looking at as far as a reduction in the fiscal year 93 budget. And for the most part, they've accepted the challenge. And then we also, in a consultation with Representative Navarre, indicated that the next step in the process then was that what they would come and discuss with the members of the Finance Committee ideas, options, not this is where we're going to take our cuts here and here and here, but ideas and options that can be discussed then with members of the Finance Committee. None of them are going to be painless. Most of them will have a significant amount of pain attached to them, but we all agreed that we weren't going to leave anything off the table. So some of the things that are going to be discussed tonight with the Department of Administration will be things that are going to be politically sensitive and even unpopular, and things that in a different time we may not even want to discuss. But our commissioners have been instructed to discuss everything, and and we hope that you'll take it in that light. It's not necessarily a let's do away with longevity bonus, for example. But it's something that has to be on the table to discuss the options, and so it'll be discussed in that light. As a side note, the $200 million reduction that we're looking at, if you just kind of do your math in your head, the budget that we have presented is about $140 million greater than the fiscal year 92 budget that we're operating under right now. And so there's about a $50 or $60 million reduction from fiscal year 92 if we were to stay at that level. Now, we all know that fiscal year 92 didn't include all the money it should have in some areas, though, because of the supplementals that we have. And so probably the amount of real reduction from fiscal year 92 operating levels will even be greater than that. And another thing, let me just finish with one more thing, and then I'd be happy to respond to any questions. Another commitment that we're working on right now and that we're committed to this year is to work with each of our departments to have a monthly spending plan and to track that on a monthly basis. Our hope is that we'll end up with little or no supplementals next year, at least in the regular operations of our departments, if we can keep track of it on a monthly basis, which is something that some departments do on their own now, but as a general rule, the state hasn't been keeping track of those things on a regular basis. So while I can't sit here and commit that we'll have zero supplementals next year, that's certainly going to be our goal, and we're going to talk it up on a monthly or weekly basis with our departments that our goal is zero supplementals next year.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we are putting everything on the table and discussing all options, I'm wondering what your views are at this point on revenue measures, on reimposition of the personal income tax, and on having a smaller capital budget as part of the solution in closing the gap. I'd be interested in your thoughts on the job impacts that we saw. If we took $200 million out of the capital budget, our job loss would be more than 6,000 jobs, whereas if we took a comparable amount out of the capital budget, it would be much less, maybe a third that amount. So it seems like these are things we ought to take into account, and I'm just wondering, how are you viewing these other strategies for getting there?
Well, certainly we do have to look at all those strategies. To start with the last first, because it's the freshest on my mind, I guess. I think the facts that are presented that there would be less reduction in jobs with a reduction of the capital budget is certainly a persuasive argument. And I'm certain that it's the fact, if you look at things on an annual basis. We think that it's important, though, especially in periods of declining revenues, that we have a significant capital budget and that we look beyond the 1 year to see what kind of jobs we're going to create in the future by this capital expenditure. I do believe that the capital expenditures that we make, we ought to look at that test and find out. Some things aren't going to, obviously. I mean, we're going to build schools and we're going to build water systems and those kinds of things that won't necessarily have an economic return or create significant jobs in the future. But a significant amount of our capital budget ought to be in projects that can produce wealth in the future. Regarding the revenue-raising measures, as you know, we have suggested and certainly go along with others who've suggested some revenue-raising measures this year in the form of gasoline taxes, some other user fees. We believe that it's a little early for a personal income tax for some of the reasons that Mr. Goldsmith talked about, that the public doesn't really yet believe we've done what we need to do as far as the reducing expenditures. There's still a perception out there that we haven't got our house in order regarding expenditures. And certainly within the next few years, as we go through this plan, personal income tax probably has to be part of the plan. And we understand that, and we're willing to step up to that.
But not this year?
We don't believe that it would be accepted this year, and don't believe it's the year to step up to it. But that's obviously part of the discussion. And what I hope we can do is work through this together and come to some sort of an agreement we can all feel happy and live with. And if it turns out to be the answer, then we'll be there.
We can all feel mutually unhappy about
it. We can feel mutually unhappy. Okay, I like that.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, the sun here is kind of like a revenue. It doesn't shine too brightly very often. But with that, I'm just kind of relating because some of the information we had before was information back in 89. And in 89, we went through an exercise that we call the Budget Summit. The Budget Summit didn't work. Not because it didn't have lofty goals or ideas and so forth to do it, but it didn't have the commitment of the various agencies, in my opinion, to carry through on what was suggested. So I guess I would have two questions. When you got some agencies with as little as a 2 or a 3% reduction, and other agencies with as much as 18-19% that they're asking, you said you got some mutual understanding or mutual agreements of among the agencies for those things. I just find that hard to believe that one commissioner is going to accept the 1% reduction or 20% while someone else is only going to accept the 1. But what is the criteria that you use to determine who would have the 1% or who would have the 19%? And even more important, what is the commitment you have within the administration then that once having made this decision, that it's going to be followed through?
There's a high level of commitment in the executive office of the administration and among the commissioners. And when I say the agencies agreed to it, it's the commissioners. We didn't have obviously all the folks from the agencies reviewing our proposal, but the commissioners are certainly on board. At the retreat we had with the commissioners last summer or fall and at subsequent cabinet meetings, the governor spends a lot of time talking about prioritizing the things that we do, and that whatever reductions we do need to take aren't going to be across the board, because some of the things that some of the departments do are more important to this administration and more important to the people of Alaska, and probably more in keeping with what the government ought to be doing than other departments. Some of the departments that we have are fairly administrative, and at least the perception is their service is to other portions of the government, whether it be other portions of the state government or other portions of the municipal governments, those kinds of, frankly, the department, and it's probably not a surprise to anybody, that had the lowest reduction in our scenario was the Department of Corrections, which I guess we've just felt we couldn't unlock the doors and let folks out, and there wasn't a whole lot of other alternative, and that's a kind of a basic function of government, and that's kind of what we looked at, was what's the basic function of government, what's the core level of services, what are the things that we're doing that don't really serve the public, but they serve other levels of government, and they had less of a priority than those that
Okay, so basically the criteria you used then was kind of a level of priorities throughout the budget, not within each department, in determining
right.
what the levels of reductions would be.
Right.
And you got commitments from all the heads of the agencies, they're going to follow through, so...
From the commissioners, yeah. We've got a general nodding of heads. Yeah.
Okay. I'm happy to hear that, and I'll be more happy if I still believe it 2 weeks from now.
So will I, Representative. I plan on attending most of those sessions and learning more myself.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that... Shelby, that what we're doing right now, and I say we, advisedly, I mean all of us, are kind of going along with business as usual until we make the decisions about what we're going to do to make the cuts, et cetera, that we all recognize we need to do. And is there any way I get, and this would be not getting at huge sums of money, I'm sure, but it would be some of the smaller sums that maybe look bad and make us all look bad. Is there any way to create some kind of an incentive program, or perhaps a disincentive program, for the kinds of smaller expenditures that are continuously being made where we waste an awful lot of money? And I'll give you an example. I mean, I've got some specific things. Some of the brochures and the reports and things that come out of state government are a tremendously expensive proposition if you have any idea how much printing costs are. For instance, there's fancy glossy things with printed covers and whatever. And perhaps in a time like this where we're looking at huge, huge cuts in state government, it would be better to go to the most inexpensive form of production you could use for those kinds of things. And I guess I'm talking about incentives, disincentives, in the sense of somehow or other we got to make every every person involved in state government understand where we are. And one of the ways to do this would say, okay, if you can save us some money all across the board on these little things, then maybe you won't, maybe we'll not get, cut you quite as badly, or we'll give you, you know, some percentage of this cut will be credited back to your department for something that you need to do, or something along those lines.
We've talked informally about it, and I probably would take legislative change. But how we've talked informally about doing that is some way that we could credit back to a department the amount they lapsed at the end of the year, which would be less of a reduction they'd have to take. I don't know if that's fair or not. I don't know if it's legal or not, and it'd probably take legislative change for us to do that. But we have talked about that, and we'd be interested in proposals.
Representative Ullman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're all pretty committed to a good faith effort here over the next few days and weeks. And, you know, I, for one, am pretty convinced that it will take a combination of three things: raising revenues, using some of our reserves, and cutting spending to leave here in a responsible manner. And that's not just true this year, it's over the next several years. But my enthusiasm for participating, I guess, is at least in part a function of my feeling that there are no off limits. That is to say, everything is fairly to be kind of considered and weighed against each other. And as it relates specifically to the capital budget, I would certainly hope that the executive branch would take into consideration not only what we heard today from ISER, but also what we've experienced in the past in terms of how capital dollars get spent. Your point about how it would be not a good idea not to spend capital dollars that can result in long-term job creation assumes that that's how we spend our capital dollars. And, you know, I don't think you have to go very far back in time to realize that even though we give some lip service to that, and we give some lip service to spending capital dollars on maintaining existing facilities, by and large, that's not the lion's share of our capital budget. Georgia recently opened a, I think, 300-bed prison facility, only to close it the next day because they didn't have the operating money to run this new capital facility they just built. And as you look at those revenue projections that we saw up there, we could be in that situation. You know, we could be building facilities that we will never have the operating funds to be able to operate or maintain. So I would just hope that this magic 340 number isn't so magic, and that we are open to a good faith effort to evaluate the relative merits and the feasibility and economic impact of these things. My daughter's a swimmer. She's 13 years old, and when she prepares for a swim meet, she doesn't eat Snickers. She eats complex carbohydrates like spaghetti, because you need something that will sustain you over time. Snickers bars does that to your blood sugar. Spaghetti goes like that and sustains you throughout the meet. And, you know, that's how spending's got to be, too. And I would just be real cautious about falling into the trap that Alaska's been in before with the Snickers bar that we think might somehow do something immediately for the economy that not only cannot be sustained, but that misleads people into a false sense of security. So I just hope we're all being real honest here and saying that everything's up for negotiation.
And we commit to that. And I think one of the things that we as administration don't believe is that an economy ought to be sustained with a capital project per se just to sustain an economy. And so I think I'm just agreeing with what you're saying, is that we do need to look at those things and not try and buoy us up with a false economy just by building something to build it.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sassney, we've heard the ICER people and the effect that state government has on the local economy, or the state economy in general. And we know that a budget cut is going to have an effect on the economy. That goes without saying. But I heard another one of your comments. And nationally, we have a really serious economic problem. And one of the things we see happening on the national level to address the both long-term and short-term economic problem is the lowering of taxes in some instances and creating incentives and other forms of economic stabilization. Having said that, is it not then true that although when we cut state government, that has a direct bearing on our local private economy, wouldn't it have a much more so drastic bearing on the local economy if you should extract money from that economy via personal income tax?
Well, it certainly has a depressing effect. I mean, we really can't cut our tax, though, obviously. It's pretty tough to cut a negative number.
Mr. Stasnik, let me just interject there if I might. I don't think I heard you talking a moment ago about cutting our tax. I think I heard you talking about reinstating a tax, and I believe that you could equate reinstating a tax to raising a tax. So that's the correlation.
I understand that, and you know, your reference was to a budget tax cutting in the national economy. Certainly, we all have. I mean, we're going to come to a time where we're going to say, you know, you cut state services as much as you can cut. We can't take any more. And obviously, there's going to be, and if there's still a gap there, the gap's going to have to be raised some way, whether it's taking away the permanent fund dividend, whether it's an imposition of an income tax. And my commitment to this committee, and I think the administration's commitment to this committee, is to put everything on the table. I mean, that was our deal. And if that can be called a deal, I personally don't believe that it's time yet for an income tax. I don't know when that time's going to come, but I think it's going to come when you're probably going to say, Uncle, enough. We need the services that we've got, and the gap isn't still going to be filled. And I believe that's going to happen someday.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I didn't have the opportunity to just say that on your deal-making, so I wasn't party to
There's
that.
There's no deal-making.
But since...
There's an agreement that everything's on the table.
And I understand that.
Okay.
With that said, I think the thing that troubles me when we talk about a personal income tax, we live in a state where we give away money. And if George Jocko, sitting beside me, accepts a permanent fund dividend, and I accept a permanent fund dividend, and I work for a living, and he lives off of government. Sorry about that. You just happen to be the one sitting beside me. And he lives off of government for whatever purpose. He's disabled, and he reaps benefits from government services, and he gets a permanent fund dividend. Well, he then is paying nothing into continue this government or services. In fact, he's getting a double dip. I, on the other hand, am working and paying my fair share. If you give me a dividend and you inject personal income tax, you've given me nothing. In fact, you've hit me twice while you've given him two times benefit. So I think there has to be a way that we resolve this imbalance before we can talk about a personal income tax. And when Cooper was governor, I recall very clearly that he wanted to put on the ballot whether or not you would reimpose a personal income tax or give the dividend. I'm going to give you my thoughts of the fallacy of that, and then I'd like you to comment. If George Jocko has a wife and three kids, he's going to draw about $5,000 from the government. I, on the other hand, only have myself and my little gray dog, and I'm paying into government. I'm really going to get nothing. But because he's going to get to vote on the same question, both he and his wife, that's getting $5,000 personal income tax will lose. Because there's more that's living off of government than there would be paying personal income tax. So when you discuss this question, I ask for you to look for the balance. And that's not to say that you remove one or the other from the table, but that you bear those facts in mind. Because it does trouble me greatly when I look around the state, and I don't believe the people of this state accept personal income tax. I don't think we can tax our way out of this. I don't think they'll accept taking away the permanent fund dividend until they see the number of state employees decrease. Not decreased services, because people have not said that. What they've consistently said is they look and say, well, we've got X number of state employees. Let's say we've got 20,000. And they look at how many people we got in the state, and they try to balance that. And because of the public perception of this, until we brought those numbers of state employees down, I don't believe the people would accept personal income tax or this accept capping the dividend or anything else. I want to know what the administration is doing in regards to their departments to look to reorganize them with fewer people, first. And secondly, you know, we've been a long time dragging the administration along, kicking and squalling to the table to recognize that we've got a deficit. Excuse me, that's the truth. I mean, I remember we were down here a month ago and everybody was hollering, no, we didn't have a deficit. We all knew it. So I'm really concerned as to what the administration is going to do. Are we going to trot out municipal assistance, revenue sharing, the veterans barrel allowance and say, these are our cuts? Those are the things I want to know about.
Representative Barnes, your comments about the income tax and the permanent fund dividend, I agree with every one of them. You didn't say anything I didn't agree with. I want it made clear that I didn't say, yeah, we ought to institute an income tax. My response was into Representative Brown's question, is income tax off the table? If I said income tax is off the table, then Representative Navarro is going to say something else is off the table, and Representative Copeland is going to say something else is off the table. I don't think we can have anything off the table. And so I didn't say, yeah, let's have an income tax. I said, we've got to have everything on the table. That was what I responded to. And if anything different was inferred, I apologize. Regarding what the administration is doing, and I agree with you 100% also that, and I think I said it in my testimony, that the people of Alaska wouldn't sit still for reducing dividends or increasing income tax until they were satisfied that we had done all we can do to reduce state spending, which obviously employees are most of which drives state spending, and I agree with that 100%. I wish it was an opportunity where we could go in and wave a wand and say, you know, there's 200 employees gone. We haven't found a place where we can say that, and we've looked hard. We've got our efficiency review team continuing to go through every department. We're going to have some suggestions that are going to have some reductions of employees, and we're doing what we can do. We're going to have some suggestions for consolidation of functions from the efficiency review team, some suggestions for consolidation of divisions within departments. How many employees that's going to be, I don't know. But I can assure you that our department is looking hard. It's the kind of thing I talked about before I got here, and I haven't given up that quest.
Thank you.
Representative McClain.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to make a comment on Representative Brown and Representative Ulmer's position on capital spending. Last year's capital budget was 352.2 after vetoes. And if we were to do like corresponding percentage cuts to the operating, say 14%, we'd have a $300 million capital budget. And so a 14% cut in the operating would be $345 million. So if we're going to do cuts, let's do it accordingly, percentage-wise to percentage-wise, because capital budget is sustaining a lot of the state of Alaska, and it builds the infrastructures. We don't depend so much on the operating as Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks does. And so I see that concern, but if we're going to do percentage cuts, let's do it percentage on capital and in operating.
Representative Boyer and then Larson.
Yeah, I think what ICER suggested to us is that we have the opportunity to walk down the hill, not jump over the cliff. Because the cliff, they indicated, is still out. They used the 1996 date as the wall. They characterize it as a wall, cliff, whatever. But we have the opportunity to walk down the hill, not jump over the cliff. And I think that that requires, Ramona, a budget agreement with the minority and the majority and the administration and the Senate, a budget agreement that achieves enough of what we all know we have to do, because you can't get it all, but enough of it so that we can walk away from here, as somebody said, feeling unhappy together. But it has to be done by an agreement and passing the pieces of legislation that are necessary too, and it can't be done by one side or the other. And so I hope that in the minority caucus, and I have the sense that it's going to work this way, but I mean, we can't emphasize too many times as we begin this process how important it is to do that, so that as we walk down the hill, we walk down the hill holding hands, because I just don't see us doing it otherwise, because I'm not prepared to trot out a $200 million budget reduction scenario that is absent the necessary pieces of step-down legislation or suspended legislation that are necessary to achieve that, or put out a $200 million budget where you don't have the agreement of the minority. I'm just not prepared to do that, and I don't think the majority is willing to do that. So it absolutely means working together. But on the issue of taxes for a moment, the increase in the price of gas at the pumps tripled over what we're proposing as an increase in the gasoline tax, eight cents a gallon. It tripled. That was 24, 25 cents a gallon higher during the war. And let's just say the war only lasted 6 months. But that still was triple what we were talking about over the course of a year. And you heard no consumer squawking, because consumer taxes don't change people's buying habits. They don't do it with cigarettes, they don't with alcohol, they don't with gasoline. They don't change basic buying habits. And so I think that is a tax that clearly you can tag to something, and the administration has suggested that maybe that's what you do, is you tag it to road maintenance and whatnot. And so the public buys that. It doesn't change their consumption habits, not at the amount we're talking about. And so I think it would be unfortunate if we took all the tax issues off the table as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Barnes.
In response to the representative's remarks as it relates to the minority, and I wouldn't at this time presume to speak for the minority, but I will speak for myself. The agreement that you will get from me is when we reach a number that can be supported by facts, not fiction. When we look at the reductions and where those reductions are going to come from, when I continually read articles in the paper that, you know, we don't have a billion-dollar deficit, we have a $300 million deficit, or all these numbers thrown around that I know aren't true, when we reach numbers that I can agree that are true based on facts, then you will get my help. But not until then, because I'm tired of too many different sets of numbers being thrown around.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, just a real quick question. This schedule that we're going through, I think it's good, and maybe it's in there, but maybe we should have an additional meeting in addition to what's on here. And what I'm saying is that there are some things that are causing the increased cost in the budget that we just can't isolate by going through agency by agency by agency. I asked this question to the two gentlemen from ICER a little while ago, what is out of whack? You know, and I went through a list like personnel costs, the size of government, the functions of government, the unique programs or services we have, the formula programs. We have to address those as a whole. We can't address those separately. Is the administration going to present something in relation to how we're going to control those things or what we're going to do? Because after all, that's what has to be done before we can even set a baseline. Are we going to have some suggestions coming from the administration in regards to those things, or do they have a plan to control those things? Or?
Well, what we've spent a considerable amount of time on is a personnel cost, which seemed to be out of balance. And I know when Commissioner Ucera talks to you tonight, she'll talk to you about some potential things in agreements we have with our employees that we may look at, or we ought to consider looking at least. As far as other areas, I was just reviewing today, although I've been in meetings mostly, I haven't had a lot of chance to review it, but there's a publication that OMB did in 1989 that talked about why where Alaska is out of balance with other states, and it's got some interesting things in it. And my guess is that although that was 1989, it's not a whole lot different today than it was then. should be happy to provide you with a copy of that, and I plan on spending some more time with it to see what some of those things are.
Sure. That's just my point, Mr. Chairman. I think we're going to have to discuss these overall issues sometimes, too, not on an individual budget by budget, but just overall.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize we're going to have a lot of time to talk about this, but in the next week, according to the schedule. But I would hope that each commissioner comes in prepared with some kind of priority list on what he feels are his most important functions in his or hers in order. Because I relate back to the first year I was here sitting in front of a resource committee, and at that time we were facing a $600 million budget the first year I was here, a shortfall. This commissioner by the name of Denny Kelso was asked to prioritize his functions in DEC. He looked at the committee straight on and says, that's not my job. That's your job. So I hope these people do realize what their job is. They're responsible for running that department in an efficient way and better know their priorities, as far as I'm concerned.
Couldn't agree with you more.
That was my comments in regards to the
Wilder.
How are we going to handle the formulas?
How are we going to happen what?
How are we going to handle the formulas? If it's not, I think I'm correct in assuming that of the $120 million in the governor's budget increase over last year, 100 of that is in formula programs and 20 of that is in state agencies. You've done this sort of 45-55 split, but clearly the portion of our budget that is growing the most rapidly is the formula programs. Are you going to be proposing some things to us as an executive branch with regard to those? Or
yes, I think we'll make some proposals, and I hope you'll make some proposals, too. I know that we've talked with Commissioner Mala about some proposals and some in his department, which is a significant part of the formula programs. Obviously, the biggest formula program is education, which is probably in my humble opinion, will probably be one of our largest stumbling blocks. If we're going to reduce formula programs, that's a big amount of, a big part of it.
When the commissioners come in to talk about their agencies, they will also then be talking about some of the formula
changes? Yes, our instructions, I think you read the memo that we sent to the commissioners, and the instructions were that while they weren't expected to come up with specific reductions in formula programs, they should be prepared to talk about concepts and ideas that that may help us to get where we need to get in the formula programs.
Okay, I'm going to make the closing remarks because we'll have plenty of time to discuss this, these types of issues. First of all, I want to talk about the process that we've set up and the reason that we're meeting at night, and that is so that any other legislator who wants to come and participate in these hearings will have that opportunity, because that way the Finance Committee, which I'm expecting this Finance Committee to drive the budget this year on both the majority and the minority side, that way, we don't get accused of being the only ones who had participation in that process. That's why we're meeting at night. There are some things that will be more important to the administration. There are some things that will be more important to the legislature, to the Finance Committee, and to individual legislators and individual commissioners. What we're talking about in this process is nobody coming to the table saying this is off limits, whether that be consideration of taxes, because listening to the economic presentation that we had, even if you cut the budget, you don't fill the gap. And unless you take some steps now to look at the long term, if all you want to focus on is this year, we can do that. But I submit to you that we'll be jeopardizing the future if we do that. So I think that we need to make some policy calls about what direction we want to head in. And that's why we're taking these department by department, so that we can identify the underlying policies and the statutory impediments that are driving this budget. And if we have the will and the fortitude, and with the administration's help, we'll be able to step up to the plate and make some decisions that will be all unpopular, but hopefully can drive us down the road into a much stronger economy and budget process in this state. As to the discussion about deal-making, there has been absolutely no deals made other than nobody's going to hold things back. They're not going to come up and offer all of the national monument types of cuts. They're not also going to blame the legislature as the culprits in this whole process. when we reach a package, there'll be, we've discussed in this process, when we reach a package that we're going to talk about introducing, the governor will take some of the pieces, the legislature will take some of the pieces, but we'll agree on the pieces that are going to go forward as part of the package. Otherwise, I think we don't get there. And I wish that everyone in this legislature would have to take a basic course in economics to understand where we're heading in this state in terms of our fiscal outlook. It's not good. And the earlier we step up and make the hard policy decisions that will be unpopular with the public, the easier it's going to be on us as an institution, government as an institution, and the people in this state who have to rely on the decisions that we make. The conservatives, the liberals, the moderates, the administration, the commissioners, everybody's going to have to compromise some to accept a package that makes, while all of the individual pieces nobody may like, everybody can agree that the package is something that we must go forward with. That's the goal that I'm endeavoring to achieve in this process. Mr. Stagney, I have met with the administration a number of times to talk through the mechanics of the process, to make sure that we're speaking off the same sheet of music, so that we try to reconcile our numbers, so that the House isn't doing this and the governor doing this or the Senate doing this, so that everybody kind of is blamed in unison. And I think that there is some protection in that. I want to ask, for the rest of this fiscal year, within your departments, are you asking them to do that what they can to conserve whatever funds that may be saved through the end of this fiscal year?
Yes, we're working on a policy right now to send each of the departments suggesting areas where they can and should save money for the rest of the year. We're talking about reducing travel, talking about reducing personnel costs, talking about leaving positions open, and we plan to have some guidelines and some ground rules at the center of the department so that even though it's budgeted, they don't need to spend all of the money this year, so we have something to carry over into next year.
Thank you. Is there further discussions?
Just dress casual tonight.
Yeah. However you want, we'll be reconvene, and we'll stand in recess until 7 o'clock tonight.